A podcast of the cinema.
You know what?
What?
I need you to pause the recording.
Oh, brother. He's Dave White, and he's always got to have the noise canceling on his headphones.
My battery died, and I needed to go get the battery.
To eat up all the batteries.
No, I bought...
You bought a jumbo pack at Costco.
I did.
Which is not licensed to just leave your stupid earphones on all the time.
I don't leave them on all the time. Well, I just use them a lot. When I have these headphones on, these beautiful noise-canceling headphones, I am employing them to cancel out other noises, such as you jibber-jabbering at me while I'm trying to do some important work, or to listen to 10 hours of ambient noise created by an Arctic ice cutter. That's a thing. It's real.
Yeah, I know.
Go to boingboing.net? I don't know.
.net, yeah.
Boing Boing had a 10-hour video of an Arctic Circle ice cutter parked overnight. It's engine idling and the snow falling. And it's so soothing. I've been listening to it. I'm on like hour six.
I thought I could take us back to like a normal microphone setting, but somehow you were just like the whisperer. And like,
what's wrong?
Now you're good. Now I turned you up, and you were just like not registering.
I don't get it.
I don't either. Anyway, I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm film reviews editor for The Wrap and a film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
And I'm a Costco shopper.
That's true. When we go with our friend who has the membership.
Yeah, we don't have a membership.
No.
No. My name is Dave White. I'm a film critic, too.
Yes.
I'm a film critic, too. Listen. Given the way people respond to you and me as a unit out in the film critic world, you would think that I would need to have a badge on sometimes that actually says... I'm a film critic too, you know. So for me to just simply say I'm a film critic too is, in the context of this podcast, is simply an introduction.
Right.
But out in the actual world.
Well, no, that I understand that. But see,
in spite of the fact that I've been doing this job for 18 years,
yes. But see,
there are local film critics who look at me like I'm your plus one.
Look,
they know who they are.
Here's
they don't care either.
Yeah, they're not listening to this probably. The balance of the universe is that most people who write into the show are all like, I agree with Dave. Dave's got this great idea. I don't know. I saw this difficult 4-hour art movie because Dave said it was great. So, you know.
Well, I'm an influencer.
Just like Cameron Dallas.
Just like Cameron Dallas.
If you are not listening,
just like Cameron.
If you are not listening to LKTV, you are missing our ongoing bafflement over chasing Cameron over on Netflix.
Bafflement and obsession.
And obsession, yes.
Because
it's the sore tooth we can't stop pushing with our tongue.
I don't get it. No, you know what that show is?
What?
That show is the weird zit that I have on my eyelid right now.
That you can't stop looking at.
That I can't stop looking at. I can't stop trying to figure out, like, is it growing? Is it going away? Is it getting bigger?
You poke it occasionally and wonder if it's killing you.
Yeah.
Like Cameron Dallas.
I tell you something. I'm not going to show anyone a picture of this because it truly is volcanic and strange.
It's more about the location, I think.
And the location is bizarre.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. The location does not faze me.
Mm-hmm.
F-A-Z-E, by the way, you guys. I've been seeing that a lot misspelled on the internet.
I hate that.
I don't like it.
It's not P-H-A-S-E for the verb. No.
The location doesn't faze me because I have had dermatology textbook acne since age 15.
Mm-hmm.
It went away in my early 20s to a large degree.
Right.
But in general, I would say that for the past 40 whatever years, almost 40 years, there's always been one. Always been one somewhere on my body.
On the property.
And you name it. Name a location, you guys. There's been one there. And I mean, everywhere.
I think I get it.
Okay. But never one on my eyelid until 2 weeks ago.
You know, it would be great
if you got, it started talking, like in How to Succeed in Advertising or whatever.
How to
get ahead in advertising?
No, it would be great if, you know, obviously if they fix it and it's not an issue and in no way harmful to you.
Killing me, actually, like, yeah.
But that part of the treatment was that you had to wear an eye patch.
Oh, I'm fully aware. I'm fully prepared for that.
You would look great in
I know
patch.
I will. I will look like, remember when I went to the Armenian dentist? The holistic Armenian dentist?
Vaguely.
Okay. There was this holistic dentist.
Who was also Armenian.
In Glendale.
Oh, this is the guy who had the magazine with the 10 most powerful Armenians.
Had the Armenian magazine in his waiting room. And the cover story was the most powerful Armenians in the world.
And Cher was like number four or something?
Number four or six or something like that. But the top three or four dudes were all like shipping magnates who are in other countries. And the number one dude had an eye patch.
Oh, of course.
And one of the best mustaches I have ever seen.
Hmm.
But anyway.
Who was it on Mad Men who had the Moshe Dayan poster? Was it, what's his face? You know, the hot one who winds up with Peggy? Stan? Didn't Stan have the Moshe Dayan poster in his apartment?
Maybe.
Because that's when I think of like badass eye patch guys. He's kind of my go-to.
He's probably a war criminal. I mean, was he? If you're a world leader, you're probably
there's some skeletons and some closets somewhere.
Someone, yes. Okay.
I think if you're looking more like Sally Van Pelt or Sally Brown with lazy eye. I look like an ad for men's shirts.
Well, anyway,
the Armenian dentist.
It's been over two weeks, and this thing is not going away. And I've long stopped. Because it's been 2 weeks, I've stopped being concerned about how it looks when I go out.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, I don't care who stares at me.
Right.
If they stare at me, I'm just going to stare right back at them until they avert their
You're
gaze.
You're going to totally Rod Stewart
them. I'm going to Rod Stewart them. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you could read my book, Exile in Guyville, published in 2006, or
buy the audiobook,
or join Linoleum Knife Patreon. You get it for free at one of the levels. I don't know.
You stopped caring about
it. I made an appointment with my doctor.
Yeah.
Because I just thought, wait, it's not going away like a normal one. It's just staying. It's just sticking around.
You've been compressing it and all that stuff.
I've been compressing it like they tell you to do, and nothing's happening. So I have an appointment on Wednesday, but I started today calling earlier to see if there are cancellations because I really just want to get it done.
Sure.
I want a real doctor. I'm not touching it. It's too close to my actual eye.
Yeah.
But something needs to happen. It's all of this beauty
must not be marred
in any more than it's already been marred. This handsome mug of mine
still has its parameters.
I have my limits. I have not seen Lego Batman.
No, but you should.
I'm going to, but you went to the press screening.
Yes.
And I can't remember what it was I had to do that night, but it was something. And
it was right before my sister came to town. Maybe you were like
to town, and I was probably
prepping the apartment.
I was probably cleaning, ish.
It looks fine.
And I and then this morning it was that it was to see Lego Batman or to see John Wick 2.
Mm-hmm.
And having seen and loved John Wick, Uno,
right?
I was most excited about seeing John Wick 2.
And
shall we discuss John Wick 2 first?
We just came home from that. I had not seen John Wick until last weekend. I somehow missed it and kept hearing it was great and had not gotten around to it. But I thought, okay, I got to see it before 2 comes out.
Yes.
I missed the press screening, which is why we went this morning to see it. Yeah, I love these movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun.
They sure are.
It's like, how do you shoot 20 heads in a row and make them all look different?
Great care and planning goes into the violence.
Oh, yeah.
In these films. It's not...
The doing choreography.
They are. I'd say in this one, to a lesser extent, maybe, than the first one.
This one has a hall of mirrors.
I was going to give that as an exception.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So anyway, here's what happens. In the first movie, they kill this dog.
And steal his car.
Big mistake. So he has to go murder everybody.
Right.
He did. He did that. And then...
he's a hitman who doesn't want to be a hitman anymore because he fell in love, but then the wife died, and then on top of it, she like left him the dog, and they killed the dog, and he's like, oh, well, I guess I'm back now.
I guess I'm back in the game.
Yeah.
Back in the hitman game.
Bigger than ever.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of hitmans...
Yeah.
Before the movie...
Attorneys General.
We're at the AMC.
Yes.
Attorneys General.
To hit men.
I know. Before the movie, we're at the AMC, so of course they show you an hour of commercials.
Oh, God, yes.
Before the movie, one of the commercials for a new TV show.
Oof.
Based on the Tooken movies.
Yes.
It's got Jennifer Beals in it.
It does.
The first thing you see is Jennifer Beals saying, we need you back into the team of Taken assassins or
Takers.
Whatever.
Takers.
Yeah. It just made me, every time I see Jennifer Beals, other people think, ooh, Flashdance. But I think L Word.
Yes.
Because the L Word is the greatest television show that ever existed.
Sure.
And it just made me think for a second, what if they it wasn't just that. That was the second thing this week that had me thinking about the L Word. On Alicia Haley's Instagram.
Oh, right. You showed me that.
She was on the same lot shooting a show on the same day as Kate Menig. Kate Menig. Alice and Shane, respectively.
You're looking very Shane today.
From the L Word.
Took a selfie. It was adorable.
And they took a selfie and it was adorable. And I miss them so much. And it just made me think, what if they rebooted the L Word with the same cast? Only now, they were all trained assassins. Just like on this new Taken show. And it's in the same universe as the Taken show. So here's what I want to happen. I want the Taken show to be a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can learn that Jennifer Beals is actually the former art professor
from the L Word.
From the L Word, or art curator, or gallery owner. I don't know what she did. Something nominally with art.
Something in a university, too.
They showed Catherine Opie a lot. Yes. And so I want her to have changed careers, become the boss of the assassins.
Yes.
And have a second, like her second, the spinoff show is L Team. Yeah.
It sounds like Debs.
This is my new show. This is my new great idea.
L Force.
Yeah, L Force. Exactly. That's the better name. L Force. But all of them.
Lesbian spies.
Alice. Shane.
Can we bring back Dana? Is she not dead now?
Dana secretly didn't die. Dana was always an assassin.
It was her cover.
Faking her death. Also,
Don Denbo.
Don Denbo.
The villain.
Best assassin of all.
Will they finally figure out who killed Mia Kirshner?
Jenny also not dead. Jenny also, much like Dana, having faked her own death.
All right.
Because of assassins.
What about the Eve Harrington assistant? Oh, hi, I fixed a movie.
All of them. All of them are back.
Cybill Shepherd and Jane Lynch?
Yes. Yes.
It's going to be...
Kelly Lynch as a drag king?
Beautiful lover Cindy?
Oh, of course.
She's going to be there?
Marley Matlin?
This is Eileen Chaykin. I don't know what you're doing. You're on some other show probably right now or whatever.
She's on Empire.
Okay, sure, whatever. You've got time.
L-Force.
This has to happen. For me.
Did you ever see Deb?
And every lesbian. I speak for all lesbians.
Right on now. Right on, sister.
Let a man speak for all the lesbians. Ladies, step aside. I'm here to mansplain what you need on television. I should have saved this for LKTV.
Yeah, well.
But this is... Listen, this has been a commercial for Patreon.
Patreon.com/linoleum night.
This is what you get on LKTV.
We don't just talk about movies.
Okay, anyway, so then the commercial was over, and then John Wick 2 started. And
Hang on.
After about nine trailers.
Every trailer I've been avoiding trying to watch for the last 6 months always happens when I have to go pay see a movie. And every trailer...
Well,
because
we didn't pay. We used our passes.
Well, true. But every trailer, because they're all aimed at the John Wick demo, they all had...
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the slowed-down version of the pop song, mm-hmm. which has... got to go. That is so officially...
This today was R.E.M.'s The One I Love.
And there was a Depeche Mode one, too.
Oh, you're right.
There was an Enjoy the Silence.
Enjoy the Silence.
It is such a cliche. Like, I'm waiting now. Yeah. Like, I just heard that they announced this week that Seltzer and Friedberg are doing a Star Wars parody.
It's going to just go straight to streaming. That's not going to the movie theaters.
I don't know.
Well, guess what? If it does,
you're not going to see it. I know, and I'm going to avoid it as well.
I'm not going. F those guys.
But
they're bad human beings.
I don't care
if someone loves them or they have children or spouses or whatever. Everyone who loves those two on a personal level is wrong. They're creating evil in the world.
I'm just waiting for the trailer that has like the slowed down version of "Hey, Macarena." I mean, they've done everything else.
Here's, you know what else I'm not going to go see? Speaking of the trailers.
Ooh, yeah.
That damn Power Rangers movie.
I have never seen a second of Power Rangers with the exception of when they used to
In the 90s, I watched it.
I
mean, it was on TV and I would look at it for a few minutes and think, oh, well, they're fighting that monster.
Except for when Night Flight would take
the fun little kaiju thing they've got.
The original, whatever version of that show was.
You know how long has it been since I've hit the mic and I just hit the mic?
Well, all right. Yeah. Then fill in that bingo card. Night Flight used to do a thing where they would like, What's Up Tiger Lily style, do English dubs of the original show that was based on.
Yes.
And then we watched one of them. It wasn't funny. It was funnier in the 80s, or maybe I was higher.
You were on drugs.
Probably.
Man.
Okay, so yeah, John Wick 2. So he, you know, it starts out with him burying all the guns back in the basement and re-cementing them. He has a new dog
Why
and a new basement.
Why does he bury all of his gold down there, though, too? Why doesn't he use the gold?
Because the gold is, it's the currency of the assassins.
I know, but it's still gold.
They only take it at the Continental and at, you know, various other...
No, you can go to Wilshire Coin and they'll just buy it from you.
Maybe they're not gold, though. I don't know. It's funny, though, in this movie, almost everything is one coin. There's at one point
everything costs 5 cents.
Yes. Like, at one point, he bribes somebody with two coins. Well, so you know he means business.
Listen, it's a full gold coin. It's big. It's like the size of a half dollar. That's a lot of gold. Yeah. You know, that's hundreds of dollars worth
of gold. I know, but
maybe even more than 100.
One gold coin gets you two cocktails at the Continental, or it gets you, you know, past the sweatshop in to see the guy who makes the bulletproof suits.
Yeah.
You know, like, everything's one coin.
That's okay.
All right. I'm just curious how this currency works.
But if he needed money, let's say he runs a little low on funds. Why did he cement bury all his coins down
Because
there?
He probably has, like, actual U.S. currency somewhere else, but the gold coins that only work in the world of the assassins that he is trying to not be in...
Yes, I know.
That's why.
I know. But then he gets back in.
Yes, because it turns out as we learn in the first film that he had to accomplish the impossible task. We don't know what these labors of Hercules were, but that was what got him out of the game.
Yes.
Turns out that he was only able to pull that off with help from an Italian gentleman to whom he left an IOU, a marker.
Roberto Benigni.
Yeah, no. And Italian guy has come around to collect. Like, yep. If Wick had stayed retired, then no problem. But now that he's shown his face again, time to collect. So yep. Italian dude wants John Wick to go murder his sister, the Italian guy's sister, because Italian guy's sister has inherited their father's seat at the head table. What's it called?
The captain's table.
The captain's table, whatever. Okay. The big mob table.
Right.
And he wants the seat. And so John Wick is like, I don't want to do it. And dude blows up John Wick's house, but luckily does not kill his dog, because he has a new dog. And we didn't want another dead dog. The dog is okay. And so John Wick goes to the Continental, and Ian McShane's like, yeah, you got to do it, because it's a marker, or everyone will kill you. So right. He does it. And
then everyone tries to kill him.
And then he goes to Italy, and and things happen. I'm not going to tell you what happens. But it's exciting.
He has to kill all the guys again.
Who are trying to kill him.
And some ladies.
Yes. And I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yes.
Because one of the things I like about these movies, and this one especially, they even up the ante from the first one,
yeah.
is that the lady assassins are not treated any differently. They are as...
They are equally killed.
They are just as capable...
They're just as murdered
and as just as murdered else. As everyone else.
Right in the face.
And the movie pulls no punches. Like, there's never this idea of
You've
like...
You've won, ladies. Feminism worked.
Equal opportunity
to
punching in the
shot
face.
In the face.
And shooting in the face. Lots of shooting in the face. I find these movies super entertaining. I think about all the movies that are sort of trying to be their own 007. Like the XXX movies.
Well, yeah.
Or the Kingsman. And neither of those have anything on John Wick. Like, nope. This is a way more interesting world. Yes. I love the whole thing of...
It is still quite... after two films, it's still kind of a mysterious world.
Yeah, yeah. There's new avenues to explore. But like, yeah. Like in this one, for example, you know, he goes to Rome and he goes to the Continental in Rome because apparently there's a Continental in every city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he sees the sommelier who's played by that guy.
That guy from Look Around You.
Yes.
I can never remember his name.
Me neither. The British guy with the, British, like the Russian name.
British comic actor.
Yeah, tall guy. He was in that awful Couples Retreat movie. Anyway, he's the sommelier, but it's the sommelier of guns and knives.
Yeah.
You know, he goes to the tailor who makes the gorgeous suits that also happen to have the Kevlar sewn into the lining, so they're sort of bulletproof. I like how this world works. I like its rules. I like what's explained, what isn't explained. It's almost like we were talking about this in the car. It's like Harry Potter for adults, like the violent Harry Potter. Because part of the appeal of the Harry Potter thing is the idea that if you were to go to the train station, there's a platform that you're not going to see. Or if you were to go to like right. these regular things that we know as a day-to-day thing, there's this whole other invisible, mysterious world happening right around the corner, right out of our field of vision. And that's how the John Wick universe operates.
There's a really wonderful scene in the third act where you learn just how extensive it is.
Mm, yes.
And that's very cool. Now, yeah. Here's what I think. It looks as good as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Everything here is very well planned. And unlike many films of the moment where action is chopped up,
mm-hmm.
they don't chop up the action. They show you what's happening.
There are long takes.
These are longer takes where you're really watching people get down.
Yeah, and I was thinking like, wow, Keanu and Common are really, or okay, Keanu's stuntman and Common's stuntman are really getting down.
But it's hard to see.
But it's hard to find the difference.
Where they start and the stuntmen stop and, what I mean.
Yes.
Okay. There, I think... Although there is a lot of great fight choreography,
mm-hmm.
it feels less balletic than the first film.
Hmm.
The first film had some really fun precision, sort of people entering and exiting and moving in to clean up. There was one scene in this film where there's a bit of a cleanup moment, Mm-hmm. And it's very sort of like, here we are doing the thing. We move out of the frame, move on, goodbye. And, you know, they might as well have done some pirouettes for you while they were doing it. And I, there was a little more of it in the first film. And the shock of that in the first film, mm-hmm. the shock of fight choreography and violence choreography treated like dancing was wonderfully fun for me. I haven't seen stuff like that since old Jackie Chan movies. Mm. And this has great, you know, stunt choreography and fight choreography and violence, you know, as something to really pay attention to. It just has a little less than the first one. And maybe it was the surprise.
The shock
of the
new
one,
of course. Yeah, it's hard to recreate that.
That made me notice it more, but
there is a lengthy segment involving Lincoln Center.
Yes.
That is just brilliant.
Yes.
From the fountain to the corridors to the subway station underneath it, it's like, oh my God. You know, and it's this really, again, it's this great thing of how does this world operate when it bumps up against our world?
Right.
And how much do we notice when it's happening?
Right. And how they're behaving a little more secretively when they're in people that they know are not part of their
super club,
their universe.
Yes. Yeah. So I love these.
I liked it almost as much as the first one. I love the first one. And this one is solid because as a sequel, it takes you
to new places.
It takes you to new places and it takes you deeper into the world and gives you a little more understanding of what's going on, although not fully.
No. There's more to unpack here.
You still leave the movie going, I still don't know who these people really are or why they're doing this.
And why do so many of them carry Anna Wintour phones?
Yeah, they all do.
No, the few people have like iPhones, but almost everybody has like
an old flip phone. Yeah. Which is cool. I'll tell you the thing I really love is in order to remain clandestine, so much of their apparatus is analog.
Oh yeah.
And there are really a couple of really wonderful scenes of
that are like something out of Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to sell it short by saying I didn't quite like it as much as the first one, because I really did like this a lot, and it's a really great, fun, bloody, point of impact kind of violence movie. That, you know, if I can't have a Nazi on my doorstep to punch in the face every single day, then this is a good close second.
Be careful what you wish for.
Catharsis. Oh, does someone want to come to my door? Come to my window for your punch.
It's hard for me to compare the two because I saw the first one on iTunes and this one on the big screen.
Right.
But I totally love both of them. Unhesitatingly recommend both of them.
Yes.
Yes.
Agree.
Do you want to tell you about Lego Batman?
Why don't you tell me enough about Lego Batman so that I don't feel like I've seen it already.
Okay.
Everyone says it's great.
It's great. It's Will Arnett is back. He was, you know, he pops up as Batman in the Lego movie, but it's all about him this time. And basically, you know, he is the hero of Gotham City, and everybody loves him, and except that he is ultimately super alone because he's still grieving the loss of his parents. So he kind of keeps Alfred at arm's length. He winds up accidentally adopting Dick Grayson without realizing he's done it, and he doesn't really take him in particularly at first. He is smitten with Barbara Gordon, who has just taken over for her father as the commissioner of Gotham City because she graduated top of her class at Harvard for police. and so the movie is about, you know, Batman learning to have a family, and that includes treating the Joker like they have a relationship, because the Joker relies upon being Batman's most hated person, and Batman just treats him like any old villain, and the Joker is crushed by this. The guy who directed it comes from Robot Chicken, and you can, this movie has the feel of Robot Chicken.
Okay, now, I'm gonna interrupt you. I'm kind of a halvesies watcher of Robot Chicken. I know you watch it every time there's a new episode.
Not
every... You know, you do.
More than you do, but not...
It's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with Robot Chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't captivate me. So what am I getting at?
Well,
what am I getting in this
movie?
Here's
the thing. I mean, Robot Chicken is blackout sketches. It's like quick gag, bam, done to the next thing, you know. And this movie is a movie, and it does, you know, for as much as it is a barrage of gags and most, just about all very, very funny gags.
Okay.
There is a structure and there is a story, and so it does, it doesn't get wearing after a while.
All right.
Which I think is what's great about it. Visually, obviously, it's a delight. You know, there's a lot of the, you know, scenes of people running down hallways where you hear the clackety clack 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 of plastic Lego feet on plastic floors.
Yes.
Whenever people are shooting at each other, the actors are going pew pew pew,
saying pew pew,
saying
pew
pew pew out loud.
I approve.
They go deep into they go deep into the into the Batman rogues gallery. So like Egghead from the TV show in the 60s, remember, that Vincent Price played?
Oh yeah,
he pops up.
Oh, yeah.
A guy, the, Patton,
no,
Patton
was
Oswalt,
Egghead a comic book?
No, he was created
well?
For the TV
he was
show.
Created for the TV show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Patton Oswalt even tweeted that he had to Google Condiment King to find out that it was a real thing.
What is that?
It's a villain who shoots ketchup and mustard. It
but
was a
where's
Batman
it
the animated series, which I'd never heard of before, or I'd never heard of Condiment King, and,
okay.
But neither had Patton Oswalt. So you know, it's very funny, and Christy and Matt, when we talked about it on What the Flick, they liked it a little less than the Lego Movie because they thought the Lego Movie was super funny and then had that great moving ending. I hated the ending of the Lego Movie.
I hated the ending of the Lego
Then you
movie
will
too.
Like this one more, I think.
Because feelings are...
I thought it was bollocks, the huggy ending of the Lego Movie.
Feelings are bollocks.
This movie does not
bollocks.
Have that kind of stuff. I mean,
bollocks.
It is about...
Bollocks.
Harvey Bullocks. It is about Batman's emotional growth, but beyond that, it's very, very funny. So yeah, you'll like it, I think.
I'm gonna wait probably a couple weeks.
To not see it with children?
I don't want to be near kids. Kids are irritating. And they don't know when to not talk in the movie. And then when they're with their mom or whatever, and the mom's like blah blah blah. Like the kids. Like the kids influence the mom
right
to talk loud too, and then everyone's talking. And
well, you know, is it in the 21 and up house at the Arclight?
Yeah, no, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go like on a Monday morning at the Grove, you know,
okay.
When there's, you know, when it's not, you know, the mommy screening.
Mommy and me screening.
Like they have the special screenings for moms and little kids.
Yes.
That you're allowed to and incur. And the lights don't even go all the way
down. You don't
want
to get anywhere near that unless
like
you're
the
kid.
The lights are like a little ways up and that you're allowed to just let the kids run wild.
Yeah.
During, like that's,
no.
That is bad socialization for movie going for your children. By the way, if you've
you're
ever
sending
taken,
the wrong message.
Yeah.
I never thought about that, but yeah, that's the first step. Down the road
it
of
sure
being
is.
A bad consumer.
Yes. Anyway.
50 Shades Darker.
Oh.
Lest we forget.
Okay, so, these are terrible movies.
Pretty much.
Here's what, I'm going to tell you what happens in this one. Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan, they're back. Although we heard they didn't, neither one of them wanted to come back.
I'm sure they were contractually obligated to do
were,
all
yeah,
three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I heard neither one of them wanted to come back and do it. But they're back. And at the end of the first one, she has dumped him.
Yes.
Because he likes BDSM too much.
Yes.
And she doesn't like it. However, he is in love with her and he's like begging for a second chance. And she's like, take me to dinner, which is, I really admire that. Please, baby, please, baby, please, baby, 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 please. Where's dinner?
That
would be my response.
That's one of the best lines in the movie, and it's in the trailer, unfortunately, which is,
I'm hungry.
I will go to dinner with you because I'm hungry.
If I were in her shoes, that would be my response as well. When do we eat? So like, oh, they go to dinner and he tries to order a steak for her. And she's like, no, I'm having the quinoa salad. Then I'm thinking,
boom,
you just ruined it right there.
It was an assertive move.
It was an assertive move.
You get stuck with
the wrong dinner.
You get stuck with a quinoa salad. But in the long run, I think it's a smart move.
I would assert my power in some other place. Because, first of all, steak is market price.
It's not even written on the
it's
menu.
It's not even on the menu how much it costs. That's how you know it's the most expensive thing.
Oh, God.
And if that dude...
In John Jamie Wick Dornan 2, is... when the guy eats the steak frites with the duck fat fries.
Listen. On the next linoleum knife and fork.
Patreon.com.
That's what's for dinner. The minute I saw... You heard me in the movie. You heard me in the theater.
The guy says duck fat, and you were like, woo! You had the response that you're supposed to have to Fifty Shades Darker to the duck fat in John Wick 2.
That was one of the more erotic film moments that I have seen in some time. It's a super close-up of him cutting...
The steak frites,
and... And you can see the duck fat just glistening.
And it's golden brown but white and puffy on the inside.
And there's the steak, like the steak is right next to it. It's like, it's like a rare bite of the steak and the bite of the potato and the... Okay, so...
Quinoa salad.
Yeah. Quinoa salad. Where was I going with this?
You were telling what the whole... You were about? Relating the tale of...
She agrees to go to dinner with him.
Yes.
And then she agrees, okay, second chance. No rules.
And, no punishments.
And no punishments. And he's like, okay. And he wants, listen, he wants out of his sordid lifestyle because he thinks it's pathological. And he knows somehow that for him, that it's a result of childhood trauma that makes him want to punish people. Because he even says in the movie, I'm not a dominant, I'm a sadist. Which is that's the S right. In BDSM. D is the dominance, I guess. No, discipline.
B is bondage, discipline.
D is discipline.
Sadomasochism?
I guess. Anyway. A dominant wants to control the person, mm-hmm. and a sadist wants to hurt the person.
Right.
Okay.
And that was that's what movie one is about. Like, you're a sadist, I'm not down, because she's kind of into the dominance part.
She is a little bit.
And in this movie, she's clearly, like, still into it.
A little bit.
At least now that he's willing to, like, give up the keys.
Really, what
she
wants is some cunnilingus.
And she gets plenty.
Yeah.
He is attentive to that area with his face.
The point I was getting at here originally was that the film is very much on the side of, if you're into this stuff, it's because
there's something
wrong with you.
Yeah, that was the problem with the first movie too. There's less of that this time, but it's still there.
And that is truly, that is offensive, as is the way that women in this film are barely ever allowed to speak to one another. Yeah. Like, there will be, if two women are in the room, Jamie Dornan and one of his henchmen come in and physically separate them.
Well, she does have an assistant by the end of the movie, and they have what counts as, I think, is an actual conversation.
Yes.
That's the exception.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The assistant who's been at the company longer and who got passed over for this promotion.
Yeah.
By the way.
And doesn't seem to have a problem with
it. And has no problem with this at all. Yeah. Hey, movie.
Look, I, as much as I acknowledge that, like, superheroes and John Wick and all this stuff are fantasies for men,
yes.
Power fantasies for men, yes. I am all about women having equal opportunity access to fantasies about stuff that they're into.
I'm fully, yeah.
I just wish that it had happened in movies that weren't this stupid.
Wish but, better films, please.
But this movie, you can really tell, like, it's going for that element, because not just in terms of, like, I'm now in charge of this relationship, and I'll tell you when I want to get spanked. But it's also like she, you know, her career stuff goes amazing. There's a photo gallery, and it's all pictures of her, and she looks great. But
terrible.
Oh my God, I'm so shy. Y'all
terrible
pictures,
art,
you know.
Terrible art of her in this gallery.
But yeah, and he has taken care of her business before his
everywhere
all the time
all day. Yeah.
And then, but by the end of the movie, they've resolved their own stuff so much that they have to set up all these sort of external factors. External
evildoers who want to come in and separate them.
Yeah, like Kim Basinger keeps telling her, oh, yeah, it'll never be enough for him. You'll never be enough for him. He needs this, you know?
Right.
And weirdly enough, I talked about this on the flick.
Kim Basinger plays the older
The woman who had introduced him to...
turned him into a kink monster when he was a teenager.
I talked about this on What the Flick. It kind of reminded me of, for a while, until it sort of dropped it as an idea, but of Chasing Amy, where you have two people where one is more sexually experienced but is invested in this relationship with a person who's less experienced.
Yes.
And the less experienced one thinks that this relationship can't possibly work because they're not going to be enough for the other one, you know, which is a neat idea. This movie drops it very quickly.
Yes.
So the third movie, which is next year, apparently is just going to be all about these external bad people being bad and trying to break them up or whatever.
Who cares? Go on.
Well, the film critic Bill Jabiri retweeted himself from like 2 years ago. No, because he was totally right. He said the 50 Shades of Grey made a ton of money with a woman director, and they will hire a man to do the sequel.
And they did. Yeah.
The first movie had female director, female writer, and female editor. Anne V. Coates edited the first one.
Yes.
This time, dude.
Yeah.
And it doesn't show in terms of how they treat the female character as much as how kind of soapy it all is.
Yeah.
You know, and these movies are dumb.
Here's my other problem with these movies.
At least they look like they're having fun boning this time, which they didn't the first time.
They are so much about the missionary position in this film.
Mm.
Accessories or not.
Yeah.
And there are accessories being used.
Yes. This is a good hole, bad hole movie.
Exactly. After like 3 seconds of the accessory, they are straight up missionary position.
That's true.
This bears as much resemblance to actual BDSM sex as, I don't even have an example to...
For somebody who has a Red Room of Pain, he acts like a dabbler.
A really well-stocked Red Room of Pain, by the way.
He acts like a dabbler. Like a dilettante.
And I don't know. I've never read the books. I'm never going to read the books.
Oh, yeah. The guy writing the screenplay now is the husband of the writer.
Of the woman who wrote the books. I am told by people who have read the books that the books do get a little more actual kinky.
Christy said that the second book is darker, whereas the second movie is not. Title be damned.
And I guess if you want the real deal, I guess you go read the books. How much time do you want to invest in that?
Go read The Marquise of O or something. Read some actual literature that does really this stuff.
Go to the Pleasure Chest.
Yes.
That's a sex toy shop in Los Angeles.
Or Toys in Babeland or whatever.
Toys in Babeland. Go get some things, straps and cords, and plugs and clamps and stuff, and
that's
put them on somebody that you like.
I was thinking about it. In this movie, she is very often dressed in a fetishy way.
She is
at one point has the garter belt and like all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He never.
Nope.
Puts on a harness.
Oh, but you know what he does do, which is my favorite? After the helicopter situation, there's a great helicopter moment in this movie.
You could argue that his very body is a fetish outfit. But...
Well, it is. In the one scene where he works out.
Yes.
She wakes up in the morning.
Police is so lonely.
Yeah. The old stingaroo. He's learning how to be tantric, apparently, in his workout gym room in his penthouse. He's on the, what's that thing called? Is that the horse?
Yeah.
The thing?
Pummel horse.
Like pummel horse with the gymnasts. He's on that thing.
Resting on his arms and lifting his entire body into the air.
His body is doing an impersonation of an erection.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
And it's delightful.
Look, I'm a boner.
Look, I'm a boner, everybody. What am I now? What am I being now? One guess.
Look at me. Look at what I'm doing.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
And secretary did it better.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The problem, you just said this, the problem is there aren't enough of these kinds of films.
No.
There aren't enough films that treat sex as a valuable topic of, you know, exploration. There are certainly not enough films where people are doing it in a way that would suggest that women are allowed to want anything except vaginal stimulation from an inserted penis.
Right.
And
we are so testing the clean podcast this week.
I know. Nothing I'm saying is dirty. I'm saying clinical, biological
yes.
things.
No, this is a rare movie where sex is presented in a way that is enjoyable and yeah. is merits being a topic in and of itself.
But no one wants to make those movies. They want to make violent movies like yeah. John Wick 2, which is great.
Which is great.
But there needs to be movies about doing it that are interesting and better than this.
Yes.
And more about, you know, women than men.
Mm-hmm.
Because guys will just, you know, guys will do anything. You know, they will. Guys will do anything.
No, you're right.
And so it's not interesting to have a movie where a man explores his sexuality unless he's going to become bisexual or something.
Yeah. But and again, it's so frustrating. I was just posting about this on Facebook because as of this week, Hidden Figures is now the yeah. highest grossing Best Picture nominee of the year.
Yeah.
But what it makes me crazy is that whenever there is a movie about women or about people of color, let yeah. alone women of color, like yeah. Hidden Figures, That never sends the Hollywood bean counters running to their desk to think, oh, how can we make another one?
How do we do more of this?
How do we cash in on this? Yeah. No, they're always a fluke.
What a surprise. Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, it's always treated like this random thing. And it's like, you know, okay, so we had Sex in the City, and then we got The Women, and The Women tanked because it was terrible. And then, okay, well, then we don't need to make any more of those.
Right.
It's frustrating.
Anyway, I want more films like 50 Shades.
But good.
I want them to be good films.
Yes.
I want more films where people do things sexually that are not constant missionary position sex. I want these things. Somebody go make that movie.
Yeah.
The end.
What's your DVD pick?
The Edge of 17.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that just came out.
It just came out. You guys, did you miss The Edge of 17 with Haley Steinfeld?
It's quite possible that you did.
It is quite possible. And she gives one of the year's best performances.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worthy of having been nominated for an Academy Award. It wasn't, because nobody saw the movie, but...
Well, it was also a super competitive year for that category. But yes, you're right. It totally...
of the best teen films I've seen in mm-hmm. years and years yes. and years. You should watch this movie. It's funny. It's surprisingly smart.
Yeah.
And thoughtful.
Yeah, it is compassionate to its characters, but also calls them out on things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's a jerk.
Yeah.
She's a jerk through most of the film.
Yeah.
Like, you want to just take her and be like, stop it. But she... But at the same time, you're rooting for her?
Yeah.
To get it together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I liked it a lot. It's funny. Well, like, a few weeks ago, I recommended Parents because it was part of this Vestron video series that Lionsgate is reissuing on Blu-ray, and the same day that it came out, they also put out another movie that I feel like I want to recommend, which is Ken Russell's Lair of the White Worm.
Mm-hmm.
A very wacky, spooky, campy horror film based on a Bram Stoker novel about a snake cult. It stars Hugh Grant and Amanda Donahoe and...
That jerk Hugh Grant,
yes. And Peter Capaldi and Sammy Davis. It's a lot of fun. It is super arched eyebrow self-aware, but also kind of sexy and also kind of scary. And yeah, it's worth checking out.
Hugh Grant being the one person that Jon Stewart said he would have never wanted to see again after having been on The Daily Show.
Oof.
Like, he openly said this, I never want him back on that show.
Wow.
Because apparently he was such a pain. And then we know two people personally.
Yes, that he was mean to.
That he was rude and mean to during film junkets. So, there you go. Now, there.
Hugh Grant.
Calling him out.
Yeah.
On his not niceties.
But don't let that get in your way of enjoying Lair of the White Worm.
Or Four Weddings and a Funeral.
For that matter.
Or basically any Hugh Grant movie where he's charming because he really is good at acting like a nice guy.
That's true. Oh, you know what? That was something else I wanted to bring up about John Wick. Common is in it.
Yes.
And Common has kind of a stiff in movies.
Well, here, this movie plays to his strengths.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, oh my God, yes. Learn at the feet of Keanu.
Yeah.
Because if anybody has translated like a certain window of
wooden-ish
screen
distance.
Charisma into a career, it's him. So I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah. I got a letter.
Okay.
David Alonzo, I've been listening to the podcast for several months. I've really enjoyed catching up with older episodes and getting to know more about you guys and your views about movies and the world. I found the podcast through What the Flick.
Yay.
Ben is my absolute favorite over there.
Oh, well, hooray.
Well, Ben does not get the love on What the Flick that he does in real life from Turner Classic Movies.
Right, well, but that's because also I think Ben is...
On TCM, Ben is the dude.
Ben is frequently absent or is there but hasn't seen the movie because of his TCM schedule and having to travel back and forth to Atlanta.
And so Ben gets a lot of heat from the viewers on What the Flick.
It's true, he does. But he's,
so it's
he's
nice
he's,
to
he's,
hear...
He's the boss.
...that someone says that Ben is their favorite.
Ben is swell.
Yeah. Ben is my absolute favorite over there, but I enjoy everyone. Christy, Matt... Bibbs, obviously Alonzo, and Dave, the few times he was there.
Check out our Murder with Friends if you haven't seen
it. Oh, yeah. We are on a Young Turks show with...
Grace Baldridge.
With host Grace Baldridge. The show is called Murder with Friends. We are on the Ed Gein episode, talking about Ed Gein's influence on horror films.
Yes.
It's a three-parter.
Yeah.
It's like, it'll take you 30 minutes to watch the whole thing.
It's a lengthy chat.
Yeah. I've been wanting to write you guys, but haven't been sure what to write about. I had a difficult adolescence, and have always felt left behind a little. Growing up, I realized that I was bisexual fairly early. Of course, growing up in the late 1990s, early 2000s, in the semi-rural Midwest, anyone who is not obviously straight... was cast as the other. I have long come to terms with my sexuality, but I felt that background was important for the rest of my letter. Sorry to get so personal. Listen, we don't care.
Let it all hang out.
Do it. We'll just withhold names. if you get real personal in a letter, we'll just not say your name. You know, you're fine. I've always identified strongly with characters and movies about young LGBT folks and their struggles. I've included a short list of LGBT films I saw growing up that impacted me greatly, as well as one I saw recently that fits in with the others. The films are Effing Amal, a.k.a. Show Me Love.
Oh, love it.
A Swedish film. Probably the first gay movie I ever saw. It really hit me hard. It was nice to think... That other young people were probably out there struggling. Get Real.
Oh, I like that one.
A British film. It is sort of cheesy.
A little bit.
Almost like a gay life. No, it's. I think it's really cheesy. Almost like a gay Lifetime movie, but at age 14, 15, when I first saw it, I really identified with the main character's difficulty with family and relationships. Nico and Danny. Do you remember that
one? I love Nico and Danny, the Spanish one.
Movie.
Yeah.
And he says, a Spanish film. I was in high school when I saw this. I really liked how matter-of-fact it is. Lost and Delirious from 2001.
I've never seen it.
Probably the
Lesbians
second,
love that movie.
Probably the second gay film I ever saw. Piper Perabo's character is very complex, but it is young Misha Barton's character, who is sort of the audience's eyes, that I really found most interesting. Poor Misha Barton. She's been in trouble lately.
Really?
Like some, like in like mental health kind of trouble.
Poor thing.
I saw that on some website somewhere. Oh. I was like,
I hope that works out.
I don't like it when that happens.
No.
I like everyone to be okay.
Yes.
I don't want people to have problems.
No.
you have such an empathy face right now.
I feel bad for Misha Barton. I hope she's getting the help she needs.
This movie is why I eventually watched The O.C., which I have a special love for. Well, who doesn't?
I never saw it. What? I never saw a single episode of The OC. I make references to like Chris McQuanzica all the time, but I never saw it.
Oh, God. One of our nieces tweeted a picture from the first episode of an iconic scene in the first episode.
Oh, the Welcome to the OC scene?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's the scene where the guy comes up to Adam Brody and says, "Welcome to the OC, bitch."
Yeah. Not to Adam Brody, to
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Adam Brody already lived there. They say it to the
Ben McKenzie. Ben McKenzie. Sorry.
Bad, whatever.
Same.
I haven't even seen the show and I know the show better than
okay.
you do.
And so her caption was, "I love welcoming bitches to the OC." I mean, I don't know why that made me laugh so much when it did, and it still does.
You know why?
We have a funny niche.
The reason I didn't watch that show is because I was mad that they took Adam Brody away from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I know. They did. Too bad for you.
They split up Lane and Dave Rogowski.
Yeah, I know. Finally, the most recent film that I watched this past week, Water Lilies from 2008. French film. To watch the main character navigate her growing attraction to the pretty girl is quietly tragic. I could list many films like these, Y tu mamá también, Blue is the Warmest Color, but these were the first in my mind when thinking about the topic. Do either of you have similar films that you think I should check out? Maybe ones that are lesser known or older, such as from the 90s or 2000s.
Oh, you're young, aren't you? I've never seen Water Lilies, but the title rings a bell.
Well, Sonny, let me pull up the chair.
I was going to say,
you're on the Country Time Lemonade porch and tell you about queer cinema from the early 90s.
Crank up the Victrola for 1991. golly. Well, you know, I did write
back in those days, we were listening to Casey and JoJo.
George Michael had just put out his first solo album. I did write an entire book on this subject. It's woefully out of print, however.
Listen. Hang on. Here's the rest of the letter.
Okay, sorry.
Thanks for reading my long letter. I may write it again in the future.
Please do.
Hoping to subscribe via Patreon soon once I'm finally done being an impoverished graduate student.
Hooray.
I will withhold the name since he did get a little personal.
Okay.
E. Thank you, E.
Thank you, E.
First, E, get on Amazon or eBay or whatever, cheapbooks.com or whatever it is.
Books by the barrelful.com.
Alonzo Duralde has a book called 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men, also for bisexual men.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a good book. I recommend it. What would I have included that you didn't have?
If he's talking about young people romances, Beautiful Thing leaps to mind, of course.
Beautiful Thing is lovely.
You know, Go Fish.
Paris is Burning. You should watch Paris is Burning.
The Adventures of Felix.
It's a documentary, but it's not.
It was pointed out to us that we didn't give enough love to The Adventures of Felix, and we were talking about
Felix. That's a French film. Paris 5-9. Early 2000s. Here's the problem with me, and I recognize that it is a problem with me. The films I like are cruel, mean, and depressing.
You want everyone to watch Fox and His Friends.
I want everyone to watch Fox and His Friends. You should watch Fox,
you should watch Fox and His Friends.
Incredible. Carell. You should see Carell. Q-U-E-R-E-L-L-E.
The Other Edge of 17.
Sure. That's the gay one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else?
Pariah
is good. You should watch Cruising.
Oh, my favorite bisexual movie, Tom Tykwer's 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You could watch
Ma Vie en Rose.
Ma Vie en Rose, about a transgender child. There is Swoon.
Sure.
From the early 90s. And Poison.
Yeah, My Own Private Idaho.
My Own Private Idaho.
Starring John Wick's Keanu Reeves.
There's a short film from Todd Haynes called Dottie Gets Spanked.
Yes.
D-O-T-T-I-E.
Mm-hmm.
Which is devastatingly sad.
Also a great short film about being gay in the Midwest by our friend Mark Christopher called Alkali, Iowa.
It's also about 15, 20 minutes long.
I think it might be on YouTube or there's...
Is it available to be seen? Alkali, Iowa.
I know it was featured on at least one sort of compilation DVD of gay festival shorts.
It's really
so
good.
Look for it. It's worth watching. Mark Christopher went on to make 54.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of movies. But
there's
seriously,
a lot out there.
Go find my book. I'm sure you can get a copy for 2 cents.
Probably.
And 2 cents in postage.
This is from Aaron.
E-Aaron or A-Aaron?
A-A-R-O-N, Aaron.
A-A-Ron.
Yeah. Gentlemen, your discussion with Manola Dargis of youthful interest in Pauline Kael got me ruminating on critics who mattered to me in my wasted youth. Kael topped the list with her breezy, witty writing, and John Simon's educated nastiness delighted me. It didn't take long. Nice word. It didn't take long, though, to notice that Simon only gave favorable reviews to actresses if they gave him a boner. That happens quite a bit. Over the years, he has given fewer and fewer favorable reviews to actresses. I came to love Manny Farber as a poet who specializes in ekphrasis. Yeah, another good word. Poetry about art.
Yes.
Yes.
Manny Farber is one of the people that I know I need to read, and I really never have.
Well, we have Negative Space.
Yeah. I know. I just,
you bought it.
I know. And
it's right here. Read Negative Space. It's sitting on the shelf. It's right behind me.
I bought a book of Andrew Sarris after he died because I haven't read his stuff either, and I still haven't done it, but I will. I'll get to it.
This viewpoint helps me to enjoy his complex prose, even when he's busy being wrong about St. Antonioni. I'm also fond of Rick Trembles, a cartoonist who does movie reviews in comics form. We have a book of his as well. Check him out. And, of course, y'all. The way you use entertainment to interrogate real-life concerns is more valuable than ever now that Resident Rump is degrading our nation. Sorry for rambling. Hope this finds you well, Aaron. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Speaking of Resident Rump, I read a letter on LKTV that I said I was also going to talk about here.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone who listens to LKTV probably also listens to this, but everybody who listens to this
does not
subscribe to LKTV because it costs $4 a month.
Right.
Now, this letter came to us from a family member, a member of our family.
Yes.
That name will be withheld.
Yes.
And the letter said that the person turned off the podcast a couple episodes ago when we sat here expressing despair over the president.
Because this show was supposed to be a rump-free zone.
A space in which people could escape. A space to which people could escape the horrors of the new president.
Yes.
I get that. However,
every so often,
y'all know we digress all the time from movies and talk about what's going on in the life.
Yeah.
The life of us. And the life of us has been, lately, consumed
of late,
with more political concerns than usual.
I think many people are in that boat right now. I think that, you know, liberals have had a nice warm bath for the last 8 years. And
well,
now suddenly,
not really. Mm, you and I have, you know.
Maybe that's oversimplifying, but you know what I'm saying. All those people who are out in the streets, there's a lot of newcomers to agitation.
I'm one of those lefties who was always giving President O a bit of a side eye.
Well, yeah.
I wanted more of a lot of things and less of a lot of other things.
Yes, that's true.
I'm not going to go into it all right now. No point.
No.
But we can all agree that we have a toxic sewage dump as president right now.
And we will do our best.
And if you don't agree, I don't know why you're listening.
We will do our best to be entertaining in the midst of that, but every so often we're
going to
talk about
it. He's going to enter
the conversation.
Yes. Every once in a while it's going to happen. We're going to talk about cinema, but the reasons we will like to talk about cinema is because it involves
talking about the world.
Everything. The cinema is the world. It is part of life. And so therefore, if we're going to, it's going to come up as a topic.
I do want to say real quick, speaking of critics we read as in our youth, I want to give a total shout out to...
Give it.
To Eleanor Ringel.
Give that total shout out.
Eleanor Ringel.
Hit that perfect beat, boy.
beat, boy. Eleanor Ringel was the film critic for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when I was a kid.
From the 80s.
I grew up reading her in the 70s. I read her my entire childhood and eventually got to know her somewhat when I interned with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when I was in college. And then she and I occasionally will see each other in Atlanta or we'll exchange notes online or whatever. But, she totally was one of a very influential voice for me. So the idea that I even kind of know her at all now just kind of wigs me out. But, the same for David Anson, for that matter. Like, reading him in Newsweek was always a regular thing. And now to know him from LAFCA and stuff, it's just like nutty.
Speaking of wigs.
Were we?
You said something. You said knowing Eleanor Ringel.
Oh, wigs me out.
Wigs you out.
Speaking of wigs, what?
Your hair has been nothing but hilarious today.
Well, I took a shower right before bed, and that's always a recipe for disaster. I went to bed with wet hair, and I woke up with this baby, rockabilly mohawk.
And then you
mohawk.
Put a baseball cap
And then I put
on.
A baseball hat on, so now I don't even know what's going on up there. You're looking at me.
It's really hilarious. Well, it's one of the funnier things I've seen today.
I'm glad I can give you some tonsorial giggles.
This last letter is from Joe. Hey, David Alonzo. Ever since I first saw La La Land a couple months ago, I haven't been able to shake how similar it is to the last 5 years and how fantastic the two would be as a double feature.
Mm.
Continuing that listener question from a few episodes back, what do you guys think about this? Well, funny you should ask, because you're going out to see a double feature tonight of La La Land and...
At Long Last Love.
At the New Beverly.
Both in 35.
35 millimeter prints of both.
I've not seen La La Land in 35. I've never seen At Long Last Love projected, even though I'm a big fan of it.
Wait, you didn't go the last time they showed it at the New Beverly?
At Long Last Love? No, I missed it.
You didn't?
I've never seen it projected before.
Oh, wow.
I must have been out of town or something. I understand that, but I'm a fan of it.
I know you are.
There are things about it that I think
are
great.
I'm not going with you tonight.
No, I know. But I'm excited about seeing it. And they're both, I think they're more linked in terms of the fact that they are, people singing live on the set, and they aren't like the most polished musical, singers, dancers. But no, I totally see the La La Land last 5 years connection. Our young reader listener who wrote in and was like massively upset after La La Land, I suspect would have a similar response to the last 5 years because it is also sort of a bittersweet movie about a romance that falls apart. I like last 5 years quite a bit. And, it's funny. In fact, when I reviewed Trolls, I talked about how Anna Kendrick is such a great, musical comedy actress, and how it's sad that there's only so many La La Lands to go around.
Yes.
Because I think in another era, she would have been, the toast of MGM.
Yeah.
She's
fully.
Yeah, she's super talented, and I like the last 5 years a lot. I had a great classroom discussion with Richard LeGravenaise. He Skyped into the class that I was teaching at Chapman and talked about how Umbrellas of Cherbourg and Two for the Road were two big influences, because not only is this sort of a bittersweet musical, but it also plays a lot with time. And I would totally go to that double feature.
Yeah. He continues. Also, are either of you excited about Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name?
Oh, yes, I am.
It's probably one of the most exciting films to come out of Sundance in a while, in my opinion. What do you guys think? Thanks again, Joe.
People
I haven't seen it.
I have not seen it yet. People are raving about it.
They sure are.
I'm super psyched to see it.
A female critic tweeted that Armie Hammer's chest hair should have won the audience award at Sundance.
I like Armie Hammer. I like Timothée Chalamet a lot in Miss Stevens. I like Luca Guadagnino. It's co-written by James Ivory. It's and the the stuff I'm hearing about it out of Sundance has been so effusive and enthusiastic from people that I trust that I'm very much looking forward to it.
All right, we're done.
All righty. Well, thanks for listening. I remembered the podcast that I wanted to recommend last time that I couldn't remember what I was going to talk about. There's a new podcast called Pure Cinema. And is co-hosted by our friend Brian Saar, who you may know from the Rupert Pupkin Speaks blog, and he tweets at Bob Freelander. It's a new podcast that he's doing and co-hosting with another gentleman whose name escapes me, but by all means, go check that one out. Thank you, Blue, for our great theme music. We appreciate it. It's always so wonderful, and his stuff is fascinating. And if you don't know his other music, go visit him at bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Check out ChristyLemire.com. Go to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast. Check out Bibbs and Whitney's two shows, the B-Movies podcast and Cancel Too Soon. Listen to The Schmoes Know and Dennis Hanlon with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, The Sewers of Paris, The Joe Al Ryan Thing, The Criterion Cast, Fat Guys at the Movies, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes, and do leave us a nice review there. We did get a nice 5-star win in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's...
No 4, no 3, no 2, no 1, 5.
It is how we stand out in a very, very crowded podcast universe. Yeah. So please go leave us a review if you haven't yet. It means the world to us. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places where this show streams, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Podcast, Satchel, Castbox and Podbean. God, these are always bizarre. And if you're on Android, we're on Google Play. We are on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at LinoleumCast. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. I'm at A. Duraldi on Twitter, and Dave is at D. Leland White.
I talked over you when you said linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, linoleumpodcast@gmail.com is our email address. And you can go to patreon.com/linoleumknife to find out about our exciting new shows, including Linoleum Knife and Fork, and also the other amazing prizes that we offer. And if you become a new member of Linoleum Knife during the month of February 2017, we will donate your first month subscription to the ACLU. Yep. So please go check that out. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. Thank you for listening. Chicken butt.
Linoleum Knife t-shirts are still available.
Oh, yeah.
To be bought.
The black t-shirts with the white lettering.
Black shirt, white letters, says Linoleum Knife across your chest. It's $20. I made a mistake the last time we said this, and I said 22, but I was confusing it for your book. Back during October, November, December of last year, we were selling your copies of your Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas book for $22. And the
I think you have this backwards. I think the shirts were 22 and the book was 20.
Oh, that's right.
You were right about
22. I was right.
The book is,
and I was wrong about being, I'm wrong about being wrong.
Yeah, the shirt is $22.
Now I'm right about being right.
Yes.
The shirt is 22. The book was 20.
Right.
Okay.
$22 for a Linoleum Knife t-shirt. More if you're outside of the U.S. Email us first and let us know where you are, and we'll tell you
anyway,
how much.
Anyway, we've got all the sizes.
Yes.
So we got lady sizes, too.
Mm-hmm.
You buy one because we got them, and we like money.
And they look great.
They look real good on you.
And everywhere you go, people will be like, what's a Linoleum Knife?
And you'll say, this stupid thing.
It's exciting, though, on those rare occasions when people who don't know each other spot each other in the wild and go, Linoleum Knife, I know what that is. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens, and we're thrilled about it.
Because we're just kind of, we're only medium popular.
If that.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all are great. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.